plan for today is to finish. The plan for today is to finish the you story, or not finish the you story, but finish for this class, right? Because finishing is, I mean, there is way too much to say, and you know, in particular, what I want to do today should take. When you do it properly, a whole semester or a whole course on quantum field theory. So the plan is to do a little bit about this Stonehenge nonsense and perturbative Chern-Simons theory. Wait, that worked before. Now what happened? Good. And then complete the discussion of knotted trivalent graphs, and then tie a few loose ends. And the thing I want to do right now is this sort of, what I it's a story I really, really love, the Stonehenge story. Though I have to tell you that I think one of the first time I talked about it was in 1998 in Aarhus, and Jorgen, who is back here but fortunately didn't come, after my talk took me aside and asked me if I've gone crazy and like sort of begged me to give a sane talk. I was going to give two talks in Aarhus that year, and he begged me to give a sane one for the second one. So that's the insane one. Anyway, so here's the story. Oh, and again, I have to remind you that my system is to try to give sort of an introduction every day. So this is again an introduction to the whole series. Okay, could have been the first point. I just chose the first point to be something else, but I mean, so no background necessary. Okay? On the other hand, it's not complete, right, in any way. It's just going to be an introduction. Anyway, so why Stonehenge? So it has to do with silliness, really. The whole thing has to do with silliness. But, so, you know, Stonehenge is famous for having kind of mystical properties. You know, if on a certain day of the year you stand at the corner of one stone and look at the corner of another stone, then it's precisely aligned with the North Star. Or I mean, I don't exactly know all the, but Stonehenge is famous for its mythical properties. Okay, for its cosmic properties. So I want to try to study knot theory using stellar coincidences, okay, using cosmic coincidences, okay? So, in fact, the first cosmic coincidence to influence knot theory is the Gaussian linking number. So, I've defined the Gaussian linking number, you may remember, of two knots. Oh, so you see, I am using some. I am using the fact that you've been here last week, but in a very mild way. Okay, so I've defined the Gaussian linking number of two knots to be 1/2 the number of vertical chopstick you can place between the two. So, right? Sorry, it was 1/2 the number of crossings, each crossing taken with a sign. Okay, but a crossing is really a vertical chopstick going from the lower strand to the upper strand, or maybe the other way around. Okay, so basically, from the perspective of somebody looking from above, a crossing is a vertical chopstick, right? But you see, a vertical chopstick, vertical is a coincidence. Vertical means that somebody chose the North Star and placed it right above it, above us, and we were counting cosmic coincidences where you can stand on at one point on the knot, look towards the star, and see another piece of the knot. Right? And it didn't have to be vertical. Equally well, I could have computed the Gaussian linking number by choosing any one of the other stars that I placed on the walls at the beginning of the hour. Okay? Okay. So the idea is to generalize this. Okay? So I will define the Stonehenge pairing of a diagram D and a knot K. So for this purpose, a knot is embedded, has a fixed embedding. Okay, it's not it's not modulo deformations or anything, but it has a fixed embedding. Okay, and then a diagram for our purposes will be a circle that represents the parameter space of a knot, and inside it a trivalent graph. Okay, so in this case it's a Y graph, but it could be other graphs as well. I'll show you examples in a minute. Anyway, the Stonehenge pairing of the diagram D and the knot K is you count all possible ways of placing a chopstick tower on top of the knot, so that each of the chopsticks will be pointing at a star. Oops, I should have said, before doing this, we fix a finite number, but large number of stars in heavens, meaning in S2. Okay, in the content with signs, I'll mention the signs in a minute, of placing chopsticks on the knot, so that each one is pointing at a star, and so that the chopstick construction realizes the diagram D we started from. So if the diagram was a Y graph, then like the green chopstick would have to have one end on the knot and the other end in a trivalent vertex, which is somewhere in R3, and which is in which also the blue chopstick and the purple chopstick meet. Okay? Now, just to be clear, chopsticks have direction, but the length is irrelevant. So, I'm hesitating to break it, because I'll break this one because it's thinner. But anyway, breaking a chopstick, it's still a chopstick. Okay? So, how many times, or how often do we... Let me say it differently. Counting means counting the number of solutions of an equation, of a system of equations, right? To be a legitimate chopstick configuration means to solve a certain system of equations. Let's count equations and unknowns for a minute, okay? So let's say we're talking about this chopstick configuration. How many equations and how many unknowns are there? So, first of all, the unknowns are the placements of the ends of the chopstick along the knots, and each such unknown is one parameter. So each one of these is an unknown. But there are also three further unknowns, which are the coordinates of the vertex. So I guess there are three more unknowns. So altogether we have six unknowns. Okay? How many equations do we have to solve? Well, each chopstick has to point at a star. Right, once we choose where the vertex is and the chopsticks are fixed, and then the equations are the chopsticks have to point at a star. Now, I chose finitely many stars in advance, and stars are codimension 2 in heavens, right? So they're point objects. So each line means two equations. So the overall number of equations is also 6. So 6 is equal to 6, so we expect finitely many solutions, right? If we have the same number of equations as we have unknowns, we expect finitely many solutions. So hence, it makes sense to say count. Now, what about signs? So, of course, I don't want to talk about signs. Nobody wants to talk about signs. But let me say it very, very briefly. Even more in detail, okay? So really we have a locally defined map from S1 cross S1 cross R3. So right, the placement of each end is in a chunk of S1, right? So the unknowns live in S1 cross S1 cross S1 cross R3, R3 for the vertex. Now, we have a map, I don't know what should I call it, the direction map. Well, this phi has nothing to do with associators, okay? It's the map which maps the vertices to the direction of the chopsticks, and the directions of the chopsticks are in S2 cross S2 cross, cross S2. Okay? Now, in S2 cross S2 cross S2, I have a number of stars written in, chosen in advance. So I have some finite collection of points over here. And then I'm counting the inverse images via phi of these points. But now it's also clear how to make sense of the signs. Because with luck, this is an orientable manifold, this is an orientable manifold, and when you have a map between orientable manifolds of the same dimension, then it has a local degree. Okay, I mean, near a specific point here, it may either preserve orientation or reverse orientation. So I mentioned luck. So the luck that is required is I need to know how to orient, I need to have an orientation for this space. To have an orientation of this space, of the spaces involved, that's where the signs come in. That's where one has to be careful about the signs. And it turns out that the information that is required is precisely the information we talked about before, meaning we need to have an orientation around each vertex. Okay? But I don't want to get into it. Okay? That's just the... You'll have to believe me. Anyway, I use this diagram equally well. I could have used any trivalent graph. In fact, you know, it could have also chords that are not vertices. So let's count the dimensions here. So again, I have 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1 for the unknowns plus 3, 3. So that's a total of 1, 2, 3, 6 plus another 6, that's 12. How many equations do I have to solve? Well, each chord gives me, each chopstick gives me two equations. So 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, I think it's again 12. And you're welcome to check that whenever you have a trivalent graph, you will have a presumed finite count which can be counted with signs. Okay? So that's the Stonehenge pairing. Okay. Sorry?
You lied a little bit here because it's not really S1, S1, S1 because...
No, it's a subset of S1 because I want the order of the points here to be as in the diagram. So it's not all of S1 cross S1 cross S1. It's
well, the middle point, the free point, the light with one the other point.
Right. Okay, sorry, you're right. I also want all points to be distinct. Okay? But, yeah, so I am lying, I admit. But for the purpose of explaining how orientations or why does it make sense to hope that there will be signs, that you will be able to make sense of the signs, it doesn't matter. Okay? Okay. Anyway, so the next thing I do is I say, okay, this sounds lovely, so let's look at the generating function of all cosmic coincidences, given a knot. So given a knot, I want to look at all, count all possible cosmic coincidences that are associated with it, meaning count all the Stonehenge pairings of that knot with all possible diagrams. Okay? So I will define Z of K, Z of a knot K, to be, forget the limit, forget the combinatorial factors, let's do the interesting bit. The interesting bit is the Stonehenge pair, it's a sum over all diagrams of the Stonehenge pairing of the diagram with D times the diagram. Okay? And then also forget the framing independent counter term, which will come later. Okay? But roughly speaking, up to combinatorial factors, Z of K will be, well, I don't know, the count for the for this cosmic pairing was 2, so it will be 2 plus this, minus the count for the other diagram was, say, 7 with negative sign, so it will be negative this times 7, plus, and so on. And it's a formal linear combination of diagrams, right? And again, it contains in it all the cosmic coincidences taken together. And again, the combinatorial factors, the only reason they are there is because I want to have a very large number of stars to allow the diagram D to be very, very big, so that each chopstick will point at a different star. But on the other hand, I want the end result to be independent of the number of stars. So I take the number of stars to grow, but I divide by some combinatorial factors that eliminates the fact that the number of stars grows to infinity. Again, it's not interesting. The interesting part is elsewhere. So what's the target space? The target space is the set of all possible linear combinations of diagrams of the kind that we've been talking about before, with oriented vertices and anti-symmetry, otherwise the orientations will not make sense in the count, and more relations, and the more relations will come later. Okay, I don't know what they are. You know, because you can guess, but at the moment I don't know what they are. Anyway, theorem, modulo Z's more relations, the result is a knot invariant. And in fact, it's the knot invariant we've been after. Okay? So, proof, well, okay, there is an easy part and there is a hard part, okay? Sorry, there are easy parts and then, well, there are several parts to the proof, okay? First of all, suppose what is it called? The inverse function theorem, maybe? I think the inverse function theorem says that generically, solutions to equations are stable. So, generically, most of the time, if I was able to place a chopstick tower on a knot, the knot is not in the plane. I'm just having difficulty making it look three-dimensional, but the knot is not necessary. Anyway, now I deform this knot, then things will deform a little bit, the end points will move, but generically, nothing will happen. Generically, the count will remain the same. However, occasionally, there will be a catastrophe, and a pair of solutions will cancel each other, or something else horrible will happen. Okay? So let me try to go through the potential catastrophes and see how each of them is managed. Okay? So the simplest catastrophe is the catastrophe that occurs, when you take a quadratic a quadratic, as you know, always have two solutions. Except if you lift the parabola up, it goes to zero. Okay? But the real the real thing that's going on here is that if you count the intersection number of the real intersection number over the reals of this curve with that curve, it was zero here and it's zero after, because one of the intersections is positive and the other is negative. Okay, so similar things may happen in our case. So let me give you an example. So suppose, you know, maybe from this point on, my knot will be, I'll take the liberty to cut the knot into pieces and move each one separately, okay? So, okay, suppose there is a star. I mean, you know, I don't know why to suppose when it can be arranged. So, there is a star right here at the height of the table, and a piece of the knot is lying on the table. And then, if I look at all chopsticks that start at that piece of the knot and connect to this star and point at this star, so they can move along this part, and they span a plane. That's not a cosmic coincidence yet. To get a cosmic coincidence, some other part of the knot has to cross this plane. And if another part of the knot crosses this plane, then now I have a cosmic coincidence when I place the chopstick right here and it points at that and onto the star. Okay? But now, suppose I have a part of the knot that looks like this, and I sort of dip it into the plane. Then, at some point, two cosmic coincidences will be created at the same time. Okay? One when I point on the left, one when I point on the right. So it appears that the cosmic count isn't preserved. But again, you'll have to believe that if the signs are chosen appropriately, they precisely cancel and nothing happens. So that's what that was a harmless catastrophe. So let me jump straight from the harmless to the most harmful. Okay? So let me now talk about the worst of the possible catastrophes, and it's illustrated, or not the worst, the most complicated. Okay? No, it's not the worst. The worst is actually later. It's just the most complicated. So it's illustrated now on the screen. Okay, so I have a knot, and again, I mean, the fact that it's knotted is over here, but it's irrelevant. I mean, I want to illustrate it on the kind of rest of the knot. It just doesn't matter. Okay? So let me describe the picture. Well, I have a blue star somewhere down there, and I have a green star somewhere up far there, and I have a purple star somewhere down there. Okay? And let's pretend that all of these stars are a little bit above the plane in which this picture is drawn. So, in fact, the blue star is not down there at infinity, but more down there. Okay? So not at the plane, but a bit above the plane. Okay? So now, if I want to look for chopsticks that point at the blue star, they would have to start... I wish I had a pointer. Well, okay. They would have to start, up where the blue line start and point towards the blue. Oh, sorry, I did it exactly wrong. I wanted the stars to be behind the plane. Okay? It's just a bit... It doesn't really matter, but... Anyway, so basically it would mean that these blue lines, this blue plane, is sort of tilted inward a bit. Likewise, there is a purple plane, which is... which is pointing at the purple star, which is again a bit behind, so it's again tilted inward a bit. And likewise, there is a green plane, and it's tilted inward a bit. And then these three planes meet at a vertex called O, I'll call it O, okay? And that vertex corresponds to a cosmic count corresponding to this combination, to this diagram. Okay? So far I'm not doing anything, right? I'm just starting to tell you the story. But is the story clear? Okay. Now, suppose in addition I have an orange star farther on the plane of the blackboard, and here are the possible placements of chopsticks pointing at the orange star, okay? And the plane, or more precisely the ruled surface, but I mean, let's pretend it's a plane, but the plane generated by these orange chopsticks cuts through the like this sort of deep, you know, how should I call it? Deep, I don't know, created by purple, green, and blue, and I see an orange triangle over here. Think of it as a little puddle, okay? But now suppose I start deforming this picture, okay? Then locally nothing happens, but at some point what might happen is that, you know, we may drain the puddle completely. Or in other words, we might be pushing the orange star back, or maybe we might be moving this part of the strand behind, or maybe something else could move so that the point O will move up. But whatever we do, somehow this orange plane will go behind the point O. What will happen at that time to the cosmic count corresponding to the Y graph? I can't continue. Somebody should answer.
The triangle shrinks?
Yeah, the triangle shrinks to zero. And in general, the image you should have, okay, is, there is some kind of, I don't know, the thing that does cosmic coincidences. Is trying to find all cosmic coincidences, and the way she does it is by drawing all sorts of planes, by moving chopsticks around along the knot, and you get all sorts of not quite planes, but surfaces. So you get a huge structure of surfaces built on top of the knot, and it's even worse because, you know, I'm allowing trivalent vertices. So sometimes, you know, you'll have a surface created by one part of the knot and one chopstick, and it will be met by another surface created by another part of the knot and another chopstick. There will be a line of intersections, and out of it there will be another chopstick, so that there will be another piece of surface. So you will have this vast collection of surfaces, and except, you know, it's vast, but it's somehow graded. I mean, some surfaces here will occur only if you're talking about very, very complicated diagrams. Will be relevant only if you talk about very complicated diagrams. So if you bound the complexity of the diagram, it's still a finite number of such surfaces, and when you deform the knot, these surfaces move around, they sort of move around, and we're looking for triple intersections. Triple intersections will correspond to vertices, and generically when three planes move, triple intersections are preserved. But occasionally you will have a case where you have a triple intersection and a surface flies from one side of it to the other. And I've described the simplest way it can happen, but it could happen deeper inside this messy structure of surfaces. But anyway, my question is, what will happen to the cosmic count at that instant? Okay, and I'm starting by asking, what will happen to the contribution to the Y diagram when orange goes from one side of O to the other side of O? Yeah, Corinne, you've seen it before, I think, so you're cheating. But anyway, nothing. It's completely irrelevant. O measures the intersection of blue, purple, and green, and where orange goes relative to it, who cares? So let me describe things for which the placement of orange does matter. Okay? So here are these things. So now pretend that there is yet another star. So now I need five stars altogether to describe something interesting. Okay? And the other star is your eye. So chopsticks pointing at your eye appear to be dots. Okay? They appear to be single points from your perspective. Just like the chopsticks that Gauss was studying. Where was it? Just like the chopsticks that Gauss was studying over there, chopsticks that point at your eyes appear to be dots. And now...
Just to go back for a second.
Yeah?
It doesn't contribute because basically by definition you're counting trivalent. Perhaps it seems like we introduced an orange segment that would occur in that circuit's job there. You're saying it doesn't contribute because...
So, okay, there are many, I'm not sure I understand you, so let me just say my thing again, and hopefully you will understand me now, okay? So, the Y diagram, contributions corresponding to the Stonehenge pairing with the Y diagram are many. There are many such contributions. Okay? In fact, even in this picture, there is the contribution coming from the point O, but there are also others. You know, every time three planes meet, three of these planes meet, it corresponds to a contribution to the Y diagram. So this will mean a contribution coming from a chopstick up there, a chopstick down here, and another chopstick down here. Like the point here, this vertex will also be a contribution to the Y diagram. Okay? So there are many contributions to the Y diagram, potentially, but still finitely many because we have an equal number of equations and unknowns. Okay? But what I'm trying to do is I want to trace one of these contributions. I want to put my finger on one of these contributions. Like, generically, when you change the coefficients of a system of equations, the solutions, you can trace the solutions. The solutions change, but you can put your fingers on one solution and trace and see where it goes. So, I want to see where this solution goes when I move the orange plane. And the answer, it doesn't go anywhere. It stays put. Okay? I don't know if I've answered your question. So basically, the fact that the orange plane moves doesn't change the count having to do with this diagram, with not only with this diagram, with the solution O for that diagram in any way. And in fact, it doesn't even change the count corresponding to this point, because when the orange plane moves to behind, it has no meaning to be behind, because if I'm looking at this point, it's the intersection point of blue, green, and orange, and who cares where purple is relative to that? To define O, you need to have purple. So in fact, the blue plane and the green plane continue behind the picture, continue behind the orange plane, and in fact I've even marked the continuation. And the intersections of green and blue continue on the other side of O. And if you push O to the other side of O, that point will simply move to the other side of O. Who cares?
So can you say what happens when the orange plane is intersecting O? At that point, you get a different diagram.
So, one thing I could say is what happens is geometrically what will happen is that there will be many contributions. Sorry, I it's time for the first picture. There will be many contributions to the pairing with the Y diagram. So if this is the knot, there will be but now let's think of it really as being the actual parameter space. So you know, this is 0, this is pi over 2, this is really the parameter space of the knot right now. Okay? So there will be somewhere along this circle, there is the part which parameterizes the things near the beginning of the blue plane. Okay? And again, I'm describing the picture locally. I mean, globally the picture will be more complicated. But anyway, so somewhere here there will be the beginnings of the blue plane chopsticks. Somewhere here there will be the beginnings of the purple chopsticks, and somewhere here there will be the beginnings of the green chopsticks, and there will be a cosmic coincidence with those beginnings. Okay? And this point will be some points in R3. Let's call it O. It will be some point in R3, let's call it O. Now, also, where is green, where is orange? I think orange is down here. So also, also there is another contribution to Y coming from blue, green, orange. So blue, green, orange. So there is another contribution to Y. And this is some other point in R3. In fact, it's the point, it's the point over here, which was not given a name. What should we call it? B for Brendan. Okay? And then when the orange plane passes through O, the point Brendan becomes equal to the point O, but it's still a distinct placement of chopsticks, so it's counted separately.
I think I understand that. It was just,
okay,
if you draw all the sort of intersection points, all the chords at the same time, then you get like a intersection or something, but you're still counting.
But I'm only counting y's.
Just try one.
I mean, for the purpose of the riddle I asked you, what happens to the y count?
Yes.
I'm only counting y's, and nothing happens.
Yes.
But now let me look at some more complicated count for which something does happen. So again, I'm introducing the red star, which is your I. And here is a contribution which involves the red star. So consider the intersection line of purple and blue, and bear in mind that it continues behind the picture, well, not quite indefinitely, but far enough. right? This is really orange is relatively small because I'm looking at, I'm comparing just before it vanishes to just after it vanishes. So it's relatively small. Okay, so there is this point. So the orange, so the purple blue intersection line continues behind, and it's this line. There is also the green orange intersection line, and it's this line over here, and the two lines are above each other. Okay? So, from your perspective, they intersect, which amounts to saying that you could put a small vertical chopstick going from one to the other. Okay? Now, so this will be a contribution. Okay, what kind of contribution will it be? It will be a contribution that looks like the eye diagram. Because I will have a purple chopstick meeting a blue chopstick over here behind, meeting the red chopstick, which in itself goes up and meets the meeting of, and goes through the meeting of green and orange. So overall, the point I corresponds to a contribution to the eye diagram. Okay? Now, what happens when I push the orange plane towards O? So the point I moves closer and closer, the red chopstick becomes shorter and shorter until eventually it flips direction. If you imagine what happens to the plane, to this orange puddle, it will just sort of reflect to the other side once it passes to the other side of O. So the only thing that will happen is that I will flip direction. You'll have to believe me that with the correct sign count, it means that the contribution to the diagram I jumps by 2, or minus 2, or whatever it is. Okay? Because instead of coming with plus 1, it will come with minus 1. Okay? So that seems like a disaster. But fortunately, at the exact same time, the contribution to H flip sign and the contribution to X flip sign. Now what's H? H is you take the intersection of blue and green, continue it, it forms a line which goes under the orange and purple intersection, and then you could put here a vertical chopstick. Okay? And if you wanted to write it diagrammatically, it will look like this. And then at the same time, and then there is a third such point, and it corresponds to the diagram X, and all three of them change sign at the same time. So if you so basically you get an overall change of twice I times I plus H plus X. More precisely, plus or minus I plus or minus H plus or minus X. Okay, I mean, you have to be careful about the signs. So at the exact same time, I plus H plus X, a factor of I plus H plus X gets added to the generating function or subtracted. But if I mod out by I plus H plus X is equal to 0, then nothing changes. And then you have to check the signs, and you'll find that the signs mean that it's not, you know, that these are the signs. Okay? Hi, how am I doing on time? What?
You just run out of time.
So, you know what, let me say one more sentence and then I will... I want to get to this blue line, yellow line, and this later, okay? But anyway, the only other kind of catastrophe, actually, of that nature, and you have to be, you know, you have to actually work to be convinced of that. But there is actually one further catastrophe which is possible. And the further catastrophe is if you have those lines of intersections of planes generated by chopsticks, and what if a line like that cuts through the knot itself. Okay? So, you know, a different way of a different way of stating this catastrophe, so I stated this as a plane going through a line, but equally well I could have said, consider the the purple-orange line, there is this line, and consider the blue-orange line, so there are two such lines, and they move around, and at some point they pass through each other. That's exactly the same catastrophe, right? I mean, I'm just... Okay? But there is another possibility, and this is that one of those intersection lines could cut through the knot itself. And then you analyze what kind of things it might contribute to, and it turns out that that it contributes, or that it changes z by a term proportional to stu. So if you mod out by stu, it does not change z. Okay. So therefore, z is almost a knot invariant, and not quite an invariant, because there is yet another catastrophe, and I will have to explain it after the break. Okay?
These are the relations that you wrote on the first.
No, I used up all the relations.
The IHX.
IHX, STU.
This was
the
Jacobian relation.
There was also anti-symmetry, but I used up anti-symmetry to make the signs work. So now I need something new.
How is the relations to the linear-algebraic point of view, this geometric point of view, how do you make this, how do you connect these two?
I'm not sure. They come out to be the same relation. You know, you can either call it a miracle or wait another hour until I explain how it's related to Chern-Simons theory, or I don't know, but I'm not sure what... Sorry, I'm not sure what the question is. So,
this is purely geometric.
Yes.
And the algebraic point of view, which I think it also comes about from Chern-Simons, is something purely algebraic relations. So, how do you, and in the algebraic point of view, we also talked about representations. So, how do you relate these two?
Either via Chern-Simons theory, or you say it's just a coincidence, or I don't know, that's part of the luck of this subject, that I said it in the beginning, a priori you would not expect that knot theory is related to Lie theory. It is, and it is, because the relations turn out to be the same. But again, I will say a word about Chern-Simons later, but I wouldn't call it deeper. I would call it, well, in fact, I would call it too deep to be an explanation. You don't want something deeper. You want something simpler. And I'm not sure what to say. I think my best answer is we're lucky. Or in fact, it's not clear that we're lucky, right? If we weren't lucky, we wouldn't be studying knot theory. The a priori expectation for knot theory is that it would be a dull subject. Because if you have a combinatorial classification problem, usually it's either trivial or unmanageable. The fact that it's sort of not trivial and not manageable and connected to deep mathematics is a surprise, and it's why we're studying it in a way. Again, sorry, I'm not sure if I'm answering you or just using the opportunity to state my ideology, my worldview. Okay? Wait, there was one thing I wanted to say. Sorry, I know we're late, but at the end, this will connect to Chern-Simons theory. This is Chern-Simons theory. So bear with me. And the other thing is, one last thing, you may wonder why you haven't seen it in the books. And the answer is that nobody ever wrote it up, and I don't know how to write it up. And I think it's a challenging exposition. If you manage to write it up correctly, so that it would be both correct mathematics but also retain the relative beauty, you'll be doing a great service. You'll be doing something great. So, okay.